going to be pretty goddamn stiff and sore, thanks to you. Tucker frowned at him, but said,
George, find some liniment and aspirin in the medical supplies.
To Dan, he added sarcastically,
I'm sorry we don't have diathermy equipment or a whirlpool bath for you, Mr. Billionaire.
Don't worry about it, Dan replied. My own stuff is probably being used right now by a red-headed lawyer who was a spy for the GEC. When he finally had removed the last part of his suit, Tucker motioned for Dan to come with him to the table they had set up at the far end of the shelter.
Our dining room, he said. You must be hungry.
Now that you mention it, said Dan, sitting down gingerly. Tucker took the slim plastic chair on Dan's right.
Before we eat, tell us what happened to you.
Yeah,
George said, straddling the chair on Dan's left. He leaned his buffalo-sized forearms on the table. It groaned and sagged.
Prove to us that you really are Dan Randolph.
Dan felt the pistol in his pocket pressing against his thigh. Whoever these guys were, they weren't security types. Professional security men would have searched him thoroughly. He felt a little better knowing that these two men were more like babes in the woods than anything else. The pistol gave him an edge, even against Big George.
Well,
Tucker prompted. Dan started to tell his story, getting angrier inside with each sentence. Kate Williams, Nobo Yamagata, even Jane Scanwell had betrayed him. Now Malik's people were taking over the empire he had worked all his life to build up. Now he was broke, alone, friendless, seemingly at the mercy of two crazy men, and burning with helpless rage. He didn't know which was making him more furious, his hatred for Malik or his frustration at being unable to do a thing about it.
You mean you expect those other bigwigs to work with the government on this greenhouse cliff?
Tucker asked incredulously. Dan sighed heavily. His back felt like a board that was on fire. I don't know what the hell they're going to do. If they can't convince the council that they'll cooperate voluntarily, Malik'll sure as damnation take them over, just like he's taken my company. His wizened chin barely clearing the tabletop, Tucker looked across at Big George.
What do you think, Georgie?
I never saw Randolph when I worked for him, George replied. But this bloke tells a good story, at least.
When did you work for Astro? Dan asked. What kind of job did you have? George scratched at his shaggy beard.
2 years ago. Came up here to maintain the surface skimmers. For the big Helium-3 project, you know.
Right. We were hiring teleoperators then, and technicians to maintain the skimmers. They're pretty complex pieces of equipment.
Yeah. Well, to me, they weren't anything but big bulldozers, with some fancy toys built onto their backs.
The skimmers scooped in the top few centimeters of the lunar regolith, separated the dirt into basic elements, and fed the ores to solar cell manufacturing plants, all completely automated. They separated out the helium-3, turned the silicon into solar cells, and deposited the cells back on the ground as they moved along. Damned expensive toys, Dan said. Big George actually smiled at Dan, or he seemed to. It was hard to tell what was going on inside that beard.
We used to call them cows. Grazed on the regolith and shat solar cells.
Laughing, Dan added. All automatic, too, or under remote control by teleoperators back inside the city. George's smile turned into a scowl.
That's what they fucking told you, maybe. But it's not the way it fucking worked.
What do you mean?
Fucking skimmers needed maintenance all the time. Otherwise, they'd be down more often than they'd be working. Bosses had us out on the surface every fucking day, fixing the bastards.
Fixing what? Dan asked.
Dust. You ever try working on the surface? Fucking dust gets into everything.
I've worked on the surface, Dan snapped. I was working up here when you were in diapers, for God's sake. We designed those skimmers with electrostatic dust screens.
That aren't worth a cow flop, George said. I'm telling you, they had us out on the surface every fucking day, just about.
But that's against safety regulations. The radiation buildup could be dangerous.
Tell me about it. I complained, but my supervisor said it was either go out on the surface or get fired. I tried to go over his head. No way. I tried to get the other technicians to refuse to go outside.
bring the problem to a boil, so to speak.
And? And they fired me. I never heard anything about this.
I suppose not. You're too high above us working blokes to be bothered with such petty problems.
Who fired you? What was his name?
His. And what difference does it make? What are you going to do about it?
Dan started to reply, then realized George was right. There wasn't a damn thing he could do about it. So what happened then? He asked quietly.
Well, George said, Astro guarantees you return fair Earthside even if you're fired. Part of the pension fund. That's one good thing about the company, I've got to admit.
So how come you're still here?
I took it out in cash and hung around for a while. Figured I could get another job. I had a girlfriend at Alphonsus that I didn't want to leave, and she couldn't go back Earthside because she was making 5 times what she'd get back home.
Dan waited for him to say more, but George lapsed into silence.
You gotta understand, Tucker said in his rasping voice, that there's a whole underground community here. People like George, who just sort of faded into the background.
Now wait a minute, Dan said. People don't just fade into the background up here. Everybody's accounted for. Computers keep track of every person who arrives and everyone who departs, and in between, too. Tucker smiled widely, showing teeth that looked artificial to Dan, and creasing his wrinkled face even more deeply than usual. Pointing to the desk a few feet away, he said,
There's a computer. You find George Ambrose in it, or Freeman Tucker. I can name 100 more, too.
100?
More, George said.
How in the name of hell can you live in a closed society like Alphonsus? I mean, it's a self-contained community, ecologically and economically. Tucker gave him a nasty smile.
Almost self-contained. Almost completely closed. We live on the almost.
How?
That's none of your business, not yet. Right now, we gotta figure out what to do with you.
Dan glanced at Big George. The shaggy giant was watching him the way a lion stares at a gazelle.
Way I see it, Tucker said in his harshly grating voice. There's 3 possibilities.
3? Ticking his fingers.
1, you're a spy from management, sent here to root us out. 2, you're some nutcase who thinks it'd be fun to be in the counterculture. 3, you're telling the truth, and you're really who you claim you are.
George held up 3 of his fingers.
So you got 1 chance out of 3 of staying alive.
Dan mulled it over for a moment, then leaned back in his chair, painfully, and tried to look nonchalant. 1 out of 3 is a good batting average. In baseball. 19. The weather forecast had been for partly sunny skies with a 40% chance of afternoon showers. But it had started raining in Miami Beach about 11 in the morning, a steady, cold rain driven by a stinging wind from the Atlantic. The ocean looked gray and angry, as if displeased with what it saw ashore. The mayor of Miami Beach sat beneath the protective canopy, of course. It had been intended to shield the VIPs from the sunshine, but some thoughtful soul had added rain flaps of clear plastic on 3 sides of the bright blue canopy. Now, as rain lashed against the flaps and wind buffeted the entire stage so hard the mayor feared it would blow away, the governor droned on endlessly with his prepared speech.
With the foresight and courage that have always marked the truly courageous pioneers and innovators who have made Florida the great state that it is, the governor thundered into the microphone, trying vainly to out-howl the wind.
The crowd had dwindled to almost nothing. Many of the folding chairs that had been carefully arranged out in front of the wooden stage had been blown over. Only a handful of people remained out in the wet, beneath big, swaying beach umbrellas that the mayor's public relations people had frantically scrounged from every shop they could find along Collins Avenue. The TV crews were at their posts, thank goodness, swaddled in slickers and plastic tarpaulins. Doesn't really matter how many people are in the live audience, the mayor thought, as long as this ceremony gets onto the evening newscasts. As long as the cameramen don't show all those empty seats. At last the governor finished, to a spattering of applause, and the master of ceremonies, a nationally recognized talk show host, introduce the mayor as the man who has been the guiding light.